Oh, hello, everyone. Before we get started with today's episode, I have a special announcement. We are so close to our 350th episode, and in order to celebrate that, we're doing a live episode. That's right. We're doing a live episode recording on Monday, June 10th at 7 p.m. at the Triad Theater here in New York City. Now, if you can't make it out, don't fret. There is a live stream option for you all. We will be discussing the 2007 movie Across the Universe. So again, if you want to come out and celebrate 350 episodes with myself and a panel of friends, we will be at the Triad Theater on Monday, June 10th at 7 p.m. In-person tickets are $15 with a two-drink minimum, and the live stream has a tiered system where there's a $15 and a $20 ticket. For more information or to buy tickets, check out the link in all my socials at ButASongPod. And now, on with today's episode.
Life's but a song, so you can sing along with a special guest or two.
Or two.
You like to sing and dance, and this podcast, by chance, explores musicals for you.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Life's But a Song, a podcast that likes to live in the land of musicals. I'm your host, John, and with me today is a returning guest continuing his magic flute saga. It's Aaron Marsh, everyone. Woo!
Hi, everyone. Thank you for having me back.
Yes. And we're here today to talk about I'm going to fuck everything up on this one because it's the Swedish version of it. So, yeah. Troflotin?
Sounds good to me.
It's from 1975. It is the magic flute. I guess that's what it's called in Swedish. I don't know. Screenplays by Ingmar Bergman. Music by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. Libretto by Emmanuel Schikaneder. I'm sorry, everyone. Directed by Ingmar Bergman, and according to IMDb, the story of the Prince Tamino and his zestful sidekick Papageno, who are sent on a mission to save a beautiful princess from the clutches of evil. Okay, so Aaron, I think I woke up and chose violence today because I watched this and I wanted to throw my laptop against a wall.
Why?
Okay. I understand the concept of this one. We're seeing a performance of it, but it's broken, the concept, because like they're grounding it in reality. They're saying, no, you are with the audience. That goddamn girl who shows up half the movie in the audience, who looks like she's going to turn into Damien from The Omen and just kill everyone. I'm like, cool. I would love that. That'll be fun. There'll be a little twist, you know, but then we're on stage. And there's the Brechtian devices to remind you you're watching a show, but like there's not enough backstage storyline happening. And when we're on stage during the show, there's real magic happening there with like the locket. Like I was just like, what's happening? This isn't real. You grounded us in reality with the weird animal costumes and seeing the backstage life and everything. And now you're showing me real magic. It's like,
do you remember when we watched the Mac the Knife and it all took place in a realistic London square? And then finally the last song was on the stage for no reason.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. Yes. Yes, this has reminded me of a lot of things where I'm like, you are breaking your own rules and I don't understand. Because, you know, 1975, apparently there's a lot of musicals that happened that year because I've done a lot of them on this podcast. All of them are batshit crazy because it's the 70s and everyone discovered drugs. It's also Swedish. So I'm like, great, it's European. It's gonna be bonkers. It's gonna be insane. And you give me this? You give me whatever this was?
By one of like the most lauded filmmakers of cinema, Ingmar Bergman.
And it's a passion piece as well, because I was reading that he saw a production when he was a kid and wanted to do it. And so I'm like, okay, cool. But like, it's a movie. Have fun. It's a fantasy landscape. I can't believe I'm saying this. I think I prefer the other one that we've done so far over this one.
About to fall off my chair.
And but that's because with the other one, when we're in Magic Flute Land, obviously they had fun. They were like, let's go crazy. Giant snake, sure. Magic, great. You know, let's delve into the land. And then we get this one, and it felt very pedestrian.
Okay, but what
Like,
about that dragon?
what about those animals? Those animals with the creepy human eyes? Like there was that. There was, I think it's the third trial when there's like a dancer ensemble in like
Yeah.
a nude bodysuit, and they're trying, and they're supposed to be flames, I guess.
Yeah, or like elemental beings of fire and water. Or one other thing is I always wondered if they were supposed to be like the souls in the underworld,
Oh, but
kind of
like,
like Ariel going through Ursula's
yes.
grotto.
But like that, when there was pockets of moments where I'm like, yes, give me more of this crazy. Or like,
Yeah.
during the interval when we're backstage and Sarastro's reading Parsifal, another opera, and somebody else is reading, like, one of the kids is reading a comic book. Oh, no, it's
Donald
on
Duck.
Donald Duck. Yeah. I was
Donald
like,
Duck.
give me more of that. I want to see if you're giving me a theater piece, like we are in a theater doing the show, give me that. I'd rather just that instead of a whole overture staring at bored faces. That overture, man. It got me so angry.
Yeah, the overture is hard to get through. And the young girl, in my mind, I just refer to her as Bergman's daughter because of how much he
She
shows
has to be,
her.
right? There was, who was it? There was somebody like kind of famous that they showed. One person is Canada's best known Inuit artist and poet, Aleutuk Ipeli. Apparently, this person was at a conference in Stockholm and was like, "Sure, I'll be in your movie." And that's
Okay.
it.
So a few things. This was released theatrically around the world, except Sweden. It was filmed for television. So I imagine it had a Swedish television budget, whatever that is.
No, it's not the money that I'm mad about. It's the concept itself and how everyone is staring at the camera, and I'm like, what is happening? Are you putting a spell on me? What are we doing?
Yeah,
Papageno creep the fuck out of me.
I did want to mention how it broke the usual television rule of don't stare directly at the camera, and that's how they deliver almost all of their arias.
Well, because I guess that it's also following the concept of like you're doing an aside to the audience. So when
Yeah.
you're singing out to your audience. But this is a movie. Or this is a film of some kind, whether it's for television or theatrical, who cares? Doesn't matter. You
So
can
what I liked about
sing to
this
your
one
people. Yeah.
is I'm sorry.
I was gonna say you could sing to your scene partner. You don't have to perform for us, the audience. This is a movie.
Yeah.
Sorry to jump
This one
you.
is also strange because in some ways it's the most, well, of the film versions, I would say it's the most faithful to the opera as well. It's the best representation of the opera. And so I was wondering if it answered any questions that came up from the 2023, I guess, Magic Flute.
I forgot to pull up my outline for that one, but I feel like it did, but also I'm now a little more confused because why I agree with, I understand what you and Ariana were talking about in the last episode where why are we following Tamino? He's boring. Papageno is clearly the lead of this opera. And even then he's a bumbling idiot.
Yeah, he's the comic sidekick, but then also has the majority of the stage time
and the largest, like, kind of growth, character growth in a way where, okay, that first trial hurts me so hard, where it's clearly like, Papageno, don't speak, and he's like, cool, I'm now going to go sing an aria about how horny I am. And it's not like a internal monologue horny because you have Tamino reacting to him, telling him to shut up half the time. So this is him monologuing, basically. And then later he's like, oh, I was supposed to be quiet. Oopsie. Like, what the fuck? That is, though, I think, the libretto, not anything to do with
it is and then it's even hard to say if he has character growth because his main objective and his main personality trait is that he wants a Papagena, and then at the end he gets a Papagena.
I did pose this question to y'all the last time. Is Papagena like a clone of him or something? Because when they tell Tamino and Papageno that they're going to be doing the trials and the reward is for Tamino, Pamina, and Papageno is like, what do I get? And whoever tells him, I can't remember who, I blacked that out. And I just finished watching this and I blacked out. And he's like, oh, Sarastro made a Papageno for you. And I'm like, a Papagena for you. Like, it's literally your female counterpart. I'm like, wait. So is she like Eve to his Adam? Like, what's going on here?
You know what? I actually think you might be picking up on something because they are, especially in this version, they are like the physical earthly manifestation of love in humanity, if that makes any sense. So like Tamino and Pamina are this like spiritual couple who's gonna be united in the temple, blah blah blah. But then Papageno and Papagena, if you notice, they come out all in brown and it's winter, and then they fall in love and they have sex, and then all of a sudden they're in green and spring comes up. It's the rebirth of the land. They're the earthy couple.
Yes.
And this, so for as much as how I'm saying this is a faithful representation of the show, it's actually not very faithful textually, because it's been rewritten in Swedish and like adapted. It wasn't just translated.
And
it
also,
was adapted and shortened.
Yeah, I was about to say, they also cut out parts, because I know
a good amount.
I know Die Zauberflaute, the actual German version of the opera, mm-hmm. is like 3 hours long.
Exactly.
And this movie is 2 hours and 15. So it's either they cut a lot of things, or they were like, fuck, we have to like say a line from this one scene because it's kind of important, but let's cut the rest of it.
Yeah. There's parts where different parts of the opera have been put together so that those characters have like a full scene arc together. So an example is Pamina. When Tamino isn't speaking with her and she sings her sad and lonely song that he's not talking to her anymore, it goes directly from there into her attempting to unalive herself. Whereas that happens maybe 20, 30 minutes later in the actual opera. And then it jumped in the film, it jumped right from there then into this scene that we're talking about of Papageno saying he's never going to find his love and now he's going to unalive himself too.
Yeah, he's going to hang himself while smiling. And I'm like,
And they did this earlier in the trial scene where she comes in as an old lady. And here she was almost more just like a clown.
She was just in disguise.
But she's supposed to be an old woman. Yeah, okay. She's supposed to be an old woman. And then that's why the joke when he asks her how old she is. She's supposed to leave and then reappear later in the scene where he's lonely. And he agrees to marry her even though she's old. And once he's agreed is when she becomes beautiful again. And it's that whole idea of like the earth cycle renewing itself. That was, it's like a feature in some of the King Arthur myths with Kundry and the swasherwoman by the well and things like that.
Oh, interesting.
So it's this motif that reappears about the rejuvenation of the wasteland.
I did like that scene of Papageno and Papagena taking off pits, because I was like, that's fun. That's just a fun.
It was cute.
And that's also like a theatrical representation of sex.
Exactly.
Where you don't actually see them do anything, but they're alluding to it. But again, I'm just still like, is she a clone of him?
Probably.
Because at least so I watched this on YouTube, and I don't really trust the translation that was on there, because there's spelling errors and words that I'm like, are you sure this is what they're saying?
I know. I felt bad I didn't get the Blu-ray. You are probably very happy you did not get the Blu-ray.
I was like, we're watching this for free. We're not. If it's on Prime, I'll rent it for under $4, but it was on YouTube, and I was like, cool, I hope I'm watching the right version of it, because I'm not rewatching it. Oh god, the interesting thing though, so when I'm writing out the outline, as it's canon, I write out the songs and everything, and I was writing out these letters and some of these words, and as I was watching it, I was like, I'm not even gonna try. We're just gonna free write notes and figure it out from there.
I looked at it and I was like, I have no idea where I am, and I closed it.
Nope. And you've seen it before.
I've seen it. I've actually
and you know this opera better. There is a moment towards the third trial where I was like, is Tamino being sworn into the Freemasons or something, or a priesthood or something like that? Like, I didn't understand the costuming of this.
Because he is. And then like radically for the time, so is Pamina.
So are they married at the end? Are they?
They will get married, but they're also going to be inducted into this Brotherhood of Light. And in this version, I may be wrong, but I think it's only in this version, Sarastro specifically says that he's going to abduct his throne, his leadership, whatever, and pass rulership to Tamino and Pamina as a couple.
Well, that's interesting too, because in this version, as opposed to the last episode we did, this one is they call Sarastro her father.
Yes, that is different.
That is different. And I remember we were talking about it, and I can't remember if you said that this is canon or this is like a take of it.
That's Bergman's take on the story, and to help streamline it is we're watching the custody battle between the two parents.
because I was just like, is this a metaphor for divorce, and Tamino is the court system. Like, I don't know what he's supposed to be then. Because, you know, you have the mother being like, kill my ex and save my daughter. And then you have the father being like, let's test your willingness to marry my daughter.
Yeah.
So it's so wild though. But yeah, I prefer the look of the other one. Because even in this one, the thing that also got me, and this is, I guess, a thing that will always get me as a theater employee, is that the dimensions of the stage keep changing.
Yes.
You saw the Kiss Me Kate movie, right?
Yes.
It's very much that, where you're like, how big is this stage? Is it one stage? Are we on, I know we're on a sound stage, but how are you climbing a ladder and then all of a sudden we're on the roof, but we're not on the roof, but we are on the
And it repeatedly goes from being from us seeing the presentation of the theater itself, the Drottenhold or whatever it's called, to being into a three-dimensional set.
Yes.
If that makes sense, you know, so that it like encompasses all sides.
Yes, because there are moments that we definitely see like in the wing space, especially when so Papageno saves Pamina and Tamino is meeting up with them, and yeah, the two of them are playing their instruments, but one is off stage and one is on stage, and we're cut back and forth. I'm like, I don't, okay, more of that, please. Or more backstage, like they should have made this Kiss Me Kate, where it's you get the backstage and what's happening on stage, but it doesn't have to inform it. It, like, you can literally just see them putting on lipstick or something, or, you know, doing a costume change.
Yeah, some of the backstage shots are some of the most fun and effective, like the ladies in waiting. One of the Queen's ladies is back there smoking
reading by a Vogue. No smoking sign. Like, come on. That was funny.
My thought is that, especially how you say it was inspired by Bergman's witnessing of the theater as a child, I think it's like, instead of a fantasy of the magic flute, the story, it's like a fantasy of an opera production. If that makes sense. Like,
yeah, but I don't
because
think we
needed
to see the audience.
We see some of the mechanics of special effects, and a lot of them are outdated. They're like what would have been used maybe for Mozart's time. But yeah, because of the idea of like the child imagining someone back there with a saw making thunder sounds and the set growing larger and larger, I think it's like a child's fantasy of an opera production of the magic flute.
Although I do have to say, Papageno's entrance, where he's running backstage and then starts singing backstage and then goes on stage, there's a moment he passes to, I'm assuming, stagehands who are just sitting there and not really paying attention to the actor. And I'm like, that's real. That happens. You get so numb to actors, you're just like, all right, you're running around making your entrance. I'm out of your way.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. One of the things that also kind of annoyed me is that he focuses on the people who are not singing a lot in this.
There I don't know if I noticed that.
There are especially during the Queen of the Night aria, where I'm like, I want to see her. I want to see her go crazy. And like, I was spoiled watching the last one, the last magic flute first, because that one where she's flying and fabric is whooshing everywhere, I'm like, that is so cool. But in this one, he focuses on Pamina a lot.
Okay.
And then there's moments where the queen is like walking through her maids.
Yes.
And is she, did they make up her to look like a witch? Like a.
So they did, but okay. My thought is it's meant to look like it's just a lighting effect that they put like a blue light on her and it changes her appearance. But I'm pretty sure they put a different wig and makeup on her. For that effect, right? But it's effective. I mean, it turns into a horror movie for a few seconds.
But I'd rather see that instead of like majority of it being Pamina's reactions to it. Because again, it's a movie.
There's an interesting case of that at the end of the film where, so this one shows the ending that was cut from the previous film we watched, where the queen and Monastatos come back for like a final siege on Sarastro and the Brotherhood at the very end of the opera. They're like marching on the temple. And at that point, I think she might even be, it's really dark. It's hard to see, but it looks like she might even be wearing a pointed hat at that point. But it starts with, we see a close-up of Pamina's face and she's all happy because she just got through the trials with her boyfriend. And then she gets a look of worry on her face. And then we see the marching queen and Monastatos coming towards them or towards the temple carrying torches, and then they're defeated and they go away, and it goes back to Pamina's face and she's still all worried, but then she's relaxed and she turns back to Mino, and it looked to me as if that whole thing was a dream sequence for her, the way they bookended it on this close-up of her. And I don't really know why other than, you know, was it her moments of worry about like these troubles from her past coming back? But
or it, she's yeah, like it was an unusual choice.
Yeah, that could be. But they still do get defeated. But yeah, it's like it is like that. Like she has a moment of prophecy or something.
Interesting. I also wasn't fully engaged towards the end of this movie.
it was hard towards the end.
I was just like, I can't with you. I'm so angry and I'm about to flip a table. I can't. There was also a moment. Okay. So we did kind of talk about this in the last time, but let's talk about it more. Mm-hmm. Tamino knows Pamina for what? A week?
I mean, he sees a picture of her.
he sees a picture of her and then meets her and then travels to Sarastro's palace, meets her, and then they get married at the end. That is what? Is that a week of time that's passed? Or is it a day?
Yeah, you know, maybe a couple days.
But also there's a moment though when he gets the locket. I feel like maybe the women put a spell on him. Is that what's happening?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
To make him fall in love with her? Like have that Disney meet cute instant love thing that is not realistic by any means, because yeah.
It's just she's just so pretty in that locket.
She's and the fucking locket where it comes to life and he sees a vision of Sarastro, but it's not Sarastro, it's somebody else.
It's the other one, Monastatos, I think, like leering behind her. So he knows she's in danger.
But Monastatos in this is a court jester. And I'm like, he's not menacing. I don't get it. He's still very rapey and very,
A reference to Rigoletto, maybe?
Why?
It's like the opera remix, yeah. I like that he had a cool collar on.
The metal-looking things around his collar it felt very military. Like he's a general or something, you know, but you put on that damn hat and I'm like, I can't take you serious, my guy. I know you're talking about raping her and doing everything else and being a villain, but you got a court jester hat on, my guy. I cannot. You are not scary enough.
So he is written as a Moor, a black slave, and
Yes, they say
I can
that.
understand them not wanting to go that route. I liked the court jester. I just thought it was such a funny image, and then his whole gang of court jesters behind him. Yeah, I thought it was a funny image.
Well, so I do remember us talking about how, like, or even you said last time, where he's supposed to be a Moor, played
Yeah.
primarily by as a black in blackface,
Yeah.
but later productions, in more recent ones, they kind of disfigure him, and I was hoping for that. Like, give him an eye patch. It doesn't have to be that difficult of a disfigurement. Just like a scar or an eye patch, or find somebody who only has one arm. I don't know. I was reading though that with casting, Bergman wanted he wanted to say, this is where he fucking figured out he's doing a movie where he's like, we don't need powerful singers, we just need singers who can portray because we have microphones and things like that. But I gotta give it to them. They hired a great cast.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. They all relatively look the part, but they sing it really well. I Pamina stuck out to me a lot, especially in her aria. But really all of them, all the voices are really on for this.
Yeah. There's one person though that I don't know who it is when okay, so I think it's supposed to be happening at the same time when Papageno is meeting up with Pamina and trying to save her. There's a scene after that where Tamino meets with somebody. Who is
Yes.
that?
So he's just one of the palace guards, but in the way it was set here, it's a library. So he's like a librarian, but he's one of the guards at the temple. And what you'll see if we continue down this rabbit hole, what you'll see is that sometimes, especially in film, that role is actually just given to Sarastro. But Tamino has just arrived. Yeah, Tamino has just arrived. And in my mind, I actually remembered this different. In the old Met production, the three doors were three pyramids. And that's what I was expecting to see. And I was like, oh, okay, that's a different production. But and so he tries each door and he gets rebuked until the third door. And then it's just the guard inside the temple.
Okay, because I thought it was Sarastro at first. And then we met Sarastro, and I was like, "You're a different person. Who are you? What's
Yeah.
going on? Did you magic? Are you
Which
magicking?"
would be great too, because there's talking about Sarastro and how he's such a fiend. So it makes sense it's not him, but then when they mix the two together, it becomes like a joke, I guess.
Again, he's just a cool dad. Like, he's like, my ex-wife is insane and crazy, so let me save my
But
daughter.
why? Why's the woman got to be crazy? She gave him a flute. She gave Pagano some bells. She
Well,
gave them
so
three boys. What's up with the three boys?
what's up with the three boys? Why are they naked all of a sudden in one moment? They're wearing all of the clothes until the last,
Until it's winter or
until
something, or
it's
maybe when it's spring,
winter,
when it's spring.
when they're yelling at Papageno not to kill himself, all of a sudden they're naked and you're like, why? Why? But also, crazy European movie.
Yeah.
I was expecting more boobies, if I'm going to be totally
There was
honest.
this thing that the movie does repeatedly too, where occasionally those
I hated
wooden signs
those.
come down.
I hate the super titles or whatever, the subtitles.
Yeah, but it's like when it's like a message they really want you to know, this is an important message, they pull down a sign.
They do it too much, though.
They do it a
There's
lot.
so much of it, and I'm like, I don't, I again, I'm not sure if what's being translated is true, but like,
Right.
Why is this important? Why are we focusing on this stone slab that has an entire short story on it? It has an entire aria on it. And you're like, okay.
It did.
What's
and I want to say I've seen that done in live productions, except it was specifically when the boys sang. And that's why I bring it up. And so, and I think there was maybe a difference in the translations here, because it was like the three boys would have the moral of whatever that part of the story was. And such as when they tell him like a man should be steadfast, patient, and silent. And so they'll bring a sign that says that.
I've got questions and I don't think we're going to get answers.
It's like the best musicals. When you think about them too much, they just fall apart. The best, I'm using very loosely.
Well, I'm just looking at my notes, and I wrote down when the creepy animals came out. All I said was no. No,
the bear or something that creeps the up on bear. Tamino. That was awesome. No, that was awesome. It like creeps
and
up.
And then
behind.
what's the one that's on the ground that's like laying down, but like paws up? You're like, what is happening here? What is happening in that scene? Like, why is he all of a sudden a Disney princess attracting all the woodland critters and a lion?
The lion in the balcony. He plays the magic flute and it enchants the woodland creatures, which are always whatever animals the theater happens to have in stock. So you might get a crocodile, you might get a panda.
Oh, it was a crocodile. That's what it was that was laying down. You got two rabbits. The eyes of those fucking animals, though, are so terrifying. Because they're like, we'll do human eyes. That's what animals have, right? Yeah.
Right.
Human-shaped eyes. Let's go. Oh, and also in this one, Tamino broke the rule of the first trial.
When he spoke to Papageno, or what are we talking about?
So Pamina shows up and he says, Pamina. And he closes his mouth and everything. Does. And I'm like, my guy, you're already done.
Disqualified.
Did we miss the second trial? Did they skip over that one?
The second trial. Okay, so the first one is them being tempted by the women
to keep quiet. Yes,
but
then
it's
all
supposed to just be the second. Officially, the second one is the silent one, which is then when. So yeah, they mix them together then, because the first one is supposed to them just be alone, and the women come and tempt them, and then there's another one also of silence, and then that's when Papagena comes dressed as the old woman. And then the final trial is the elements,
the fire, yeah,
which goes was in okay, so in the opera was likely inspired from false tales about ancient Egypt, however trials of experiences of the elements do go back to the Elysian and Orphic mysteries, which also have their like echoes in Freemasonry. So there's like all these there it is a very, as we've talked about in the other episode, it is a very Masonic opera, although I don't think it matters that much, you know, like it's always brought up, but I don't think it's
the only time
it comes
I think
out to really mean anything.
The only time I think it matters is at the end when they're like, hey, you two are now going to be Freemasons. Enjoy your life.
Yeah.
What did you call it? Elysian and...
The Elysian mysteries, and which is like the inspired by the myths of Persephone and her mother Demeter searching for her. And then the Orphic mysteries, which... are both about, strangely, both about the myth of Orpheus, which you can see in this, like instead of his lyre, it's the magic flute, but and the Orphic mysteries also deal with a god named Dionysus.
Oh, when they're going through the trial and he's playing the flute and...
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, were they told,
I rage blacked out this moment. Were they told not to look back? Is that why it was happening?
He was told not to look back, and he did. And
No,
I
I meant
think that's
in this, in.
in this, I don't think they are. I think in this, that shows up most directly in the scene where Pamina thinks that she in this production, she's standing behind him and she's singing about how he doesn't love her anymore and he has to remain quiet. He can't tell her.
Oh, see, and I saw the Orpheus moment in the third trial where they're going around
Literally
and
going through like the underworld, it
the
seems, with
underworld,
those
yeah.
dancing bodies. Yeah, definitely.
And I was like, okay, so are they not supposed to look back or not engage with the bodies? Are the bodies even human? Are they flames? What's going on here? This is the
Right.
crazy shit I was hoping for 2 hours ago.
I think there is an element of that. Like if they look back, they probably will become lost because they'll be too afraid to keep going.
Yeah. Don't engage. Don't engage. Keep going.
Don't dance with the flames.
There's I'm just blasting through my notes, be like, what should we talk about next? I don't know.
We could do sharps and flats.
So at the end of the movie, Sarastro is holding on to the flute. So are they saying that the flute is Sarastro's? Is that part of the text as
Yes, they
well?
are, because okay, in again, in this adaption, it did come from Sarastro because she tells him that her father carved it from a sacred oak.
Okay. But
So
that's
he sort of
only
engineered this whole thing.
but that is this adaptation. That's not
That's this adaptation, right? It is not his flute in like the history of Die Zauberflöte.
Got it. Man, I hope the next one that we do is bonkers. I don't even remember which one it is, but I just want a crazy film that is all magic flute. Not the last movie where it's half set
Right.
in a boarding school. This one almost, but not quite there. I just want Cuckoo Bananas crazy. Like I want to feel like I'm on drugs. That's all I want out of a magic flute.
I think the craziest is probably not a film, but the full length Julie Taymor. So not the child version that's now, but they used to have a 3-hour Julie Taymor in German. And I think that's probably the craziest. I don't really like it. It's crazy. It's cool. Queen of the Night is like an alien.
Oh yeah, she. But I mean, film, because it's a
Yeah, film.
because when you have a movie, you can break all rules of reality, as
Right.
we've seen. And this opera, like it does call for magic, because there it's called the magic flute for fuck's sake. So there is some sort of element of like mysticism happening that you can do whatever you want. People can fly. There's a giant dragon in this one, but it's a snake, maybe? I don't know. Do a creature. Have other mythical beings around.
Yeah.
Have the three ladies be like nymphs or something. Who cares? Just like go. Have fun. And that's all I want out of a magic flute. And
I actually want that too.
I was really hoping this one would deliver because, like I said, it's the 70s and European. So the ingredients were there to be a batshit crazy drug-induced movie. And we got this.
And in our ideal magic flute film, is it pure Mozart they are playing, or is it like Mozart meets Trans-Siberian Orchestra?
Oh, you know what? I feel like you can update the instrumentation of it. So little Trans-Siberian Orchestra, but like keep it in German, keep it in have it in English. I don't care. I think keep it in German though, because this way then you get the true translation instead of the one that is like, we added this word because it sounded better when you're singing in English.
Yeah.
So, okay, I'm putting this out into the universe. It may not be the next one that we do, but it in the universe, if there is a movie, not a stage production, a movie, a film of the Magic Flute that is this crazy, somebody let me know, please, or make it happen. Because
yeah,
my
make
God,
it happen in our life.
My God, it calls for it. It's a fantasy.
Totally. That's what I was so excited about for the 2022-2023 version. And, you know, it gave us a little bit of that, but not enough.
I did like how that one, like even Ariana pointed out, how that one justified Tamino not being in scenes.
That helped.
But then that got me angry again watching this one, being like, why isn't he here?
Where the fuck is Tamino?
Why
He's
is it
riding
Papageno
on a balloon?
Why does Papageno
he
go
was
in
literally
first?
Off riding on a balloon while the princess is getting rescued.
Why? To me, and Papageno even has the line of, "I came before him. I showed up before him because that's what that was the plan." And you're like, why? Shouldn't the plan be like, you go that way, I go this way, we'll meet in the middle? Like, and that's what was in that other movie.
Totally. He's like, so there might be some danger there. How about you go first and find out in case they're ready to kill somebody?
Oh, so this one, I would say, is more of an operetta than an opera. But like, is Die Zauberflaute an operetta as well, or is it an opera?
In that sense, yes. It's called, I think the word is called a Singspiel or something like that. It is a type of German opera that was popular at the time. Very popular. So it played in large spaces, not necessarily just opera houses. But yeah, I want to say it's called a Singspiel. And this film actually cut out a good amount of the dialogue. So like Monocytos and his band have scenes that are not in here as well, besides the songs.
The round table, basically, that's in this movie.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Not you said Monocytos, and I thought Sarastro had the
but
round
there's
table.
Like, yeah, Sarastro's has his council of brothers, I guess. But then, yeah, the servants have sort of like comic scenes.
My goodness. Well, I'm sorry I shat on this, but I'm not really, because, again, like I said, I think I woke up and chose violence today.
It is a very sweet film. Would you agree with that sentiment?
Yes. Yes, I think the violence and anger I'm displaying is just my own hopes for it. I don't want to shit the actors because they were great. A lot of these will be answered in Sharp and Flat. So is there anything else, though, you want to talk about before we get there?
No, that's good.
Great. Let's get into Sharp and Flat, shall we?
Sharp Flat.
So in this section of the podcast, we're going to highlight some moments, whether or not we talked about it. If we liked it, it's sharp. If we didn't like it or thought it could change, it's flat. What do you want to start with? I'm open to anything. I have about.
Let's start with sharps. There's so many ways to hate the film. I didn't really take flats,
Let's go.
I think they're going to just come up in the discussion.
Let's go. I'm ready.
Yeah.
All right. So you want to start with your sharps?
Sure. I love the dragon. I cry, like I laugh every time that dragon comes out on stage, no matter how many times I've seen this film. I laughed like best probably the first time I saw this film.
Because I remember us talking at length that it was a snake in the last one.
Yes.
And I was like, where's the snake? Why is this a snake? It's a dragon, though. What's going on?
Is the cool snake gonna follow the dragon? Like, is he being chased too?
Have you ever seen the 1980s Alice in Wonderland live action with Carol
Channing?
Oh
yeah, with the Jabberwocky.
Like, that Jabberwocky and this dragon, I think, are cousins. Because at least the Jabberwocky was able to shoot fire out of its mouth. And I was like, given time, I think they would have figured it out for this with this dragon.
Oh, I wish that Jabberwocky was in this one. Could you imagine?
Should have been in the audience. I would have rather it cut away to that fucking Jabberwocky.
He happened
Jabberwocky.
To be in Stockholm. We invited him to the taping.
instead of Bergman's daughter, who I swear is half awake half the time that they cut away to her. Like, the audience members gave that, you know, we're in a boring history class and the professor is just rattling off dates and wars and everything. You're all like, like, that's the face that they're giving in the overture. But they somewhere in either the Wikipedia or the IMDb, they're like, the little girl is so enthralled in this production. I went, are you sure about that? She looks like she was dragged there and is like, okay, I guess we're gonna, oh, look, the dragon, maybe that's what I'm reacting to, and now I'm bored. Like, anyway,
there was also a scene with those three boys when I think it's when they're stopping Pamina from doing her thing, but they appear behind bars and they are giving Damien Omen looks at her.
Yes. Yes.
The three evil boys.
Yes. Yes. They, like, I was expecting the Bergman's daughter to all of a sudden turn into Carrie, because she kind of looked like Sissy Spacek, like float in the air and set fire to the building and kill everyone. Like, what's happening here? Anyway, what are the rest of your shards?
There's a difficult moment in the libretto where the three, okay, not the three boys, but the three women, the three ladies to the queen, they lock Papageno's mouth. And that's always a bit difficult to stage. In the last version, it might have, I don't remember if it disappeared like in the Matrix or how they did it, but there was a nice effect here where it was like this piece of iron that they just put over his skull,
yeah,
and then
the
it locked
leaf
on his
or
lips.
Whatever.
And it was pretty also, you know, I mean, it was like a pretty piece, and I really liked that. When Tamino finally arrives to the temple complex, he's seeing how beautiful it is and how this really must be a great brotherhood that's run by art, wisdom, and beauty. And I was thinking how progressive Mozart was in writing this and making that the ideal that they were working towards. But then when Tamino finds out that Sarastro actually runs the temple, he goes all emo and yells, "All is hypocrisy!" And he stays pretty emo for the rest of the scene. And I thought that was really hilarious. That was definitely a sharp.
Yes, they're just Freemasons, and that's all they do. They don't do any gay stuff there, not at all. Sorry, I had to. Any other sharps?
He sings an aria right there called it begins, "Oh, Endless Night." I really liked that. That was a sharp. And the final chorus of Act One, actually all the choral pieces, they just sound huge to me. Probably a larger, you know, a larger group of singers than can be used on stage. But between the chorus and the orchestra, yeah, all
that
the final
stage.
Choral numbers sound huge.
That could be
on
used
that stage, on that 10x10 stage.
My God.
Sharp for a 5-minute pause. I do love a 5-minute pause in the middle of a movie,
even though it wasn't,
especially
5 minutes.
In a long movie.
it was not five minutes. It was a minute, because I was like, fuck this, if this is 5 minutes, I am fast forwarding as much as I can. And I looked and I went, oh, it's only like 30 seconds to a minute, fine, I'll deal with it.
Another aria I really do want to sharp Pamina's blue aria in the second act, especially I flatted it in 2023's Magic Flute.
Is this the one where she's sad that he's not talking to her?
Yeah, and it's really, really pretty piece of music. They put a lot of echo on her voice for this, but it came out, you know, just in such a nice effect, and she does sing it well. And then that Sarastro will abdicate and leave rulership to this modern new couple. I think that's a very forward-thinking idea. Women are still not allowed in the Masons today, other than like some French groups and some fringe groups called like co-Masons or co-Masonry. That Mozart was pushing towards that in 1750 or whatever, I think is pretty amazing.
To get women in it?
He believed that women should be. Also around this time, Masonry in Austria was under attack, which might play into the story. So the Queen of the Night being like the Queen of Austria at the time, who was coming down on Masonry.
Yes, I get that. I do actually have stripes. So do you have any more?
I think that's it.
Okay. I shat on this whole thing, but there's some things that I was like, ooh, and I did mention them, but I sharped the cast because they sounded great. I sharped the set design for the show within the show, because there were moments where it was very storybook, where they would, the scene changes and everything, and they would, it was very childlike, but also very effective.
Yeah.
Those moments. I'm not sharping the whole set design because I don't agree with it that it's, the stage is whatever size it needs to be depending on the wants of the scene. But like those theatrical moments, I was like, cool, that's a sharp. I also sharped the backstage sequence during the interval. So like you have the one woman smoking by the no smoking sign, the Sarastro reading the next opera he's assuming he's going to be working on.
Right. It's Parsifal and Donald Duck right next to each other. That is a great gag.
I also sharped the choreographed costume change between Papageno and Papagena. That's what I called it. I didn't know how else to call it. Cause it was, it's choreography and they're flirty and they're both dumb.
For people who probably are not going to watch this film, I really like that you called out that it was like a euphemism for sex too, because the lyrics they're singing at the time is how they're going to have more children, and then another Papageno, and then another Papagena, and then another Papageno, and then another Papagena, as they keep removing an article of clothing. So it's like a multi-layered reference to sex.
It's also so dumb because it's like, I'm going to take off one of your gloves, and now I'm going to take off one of your gloves, and I'm going to take off your other glove, and I'm going to take off your other glove, and I'm going to rip off your sleeve. Like, whoa! What?
You know what? This is actually basically the same number as in the Mr. Snow in Carousel, where they're talking about like, are you building up to another fleet? You know, another little, yeah.
My last stripe is for the insanity of the third trial, because that's what I was hoping for the whole movie, and it didn't deliver. So good job, third trial, the elemental one.
Yeah.
All right. Blatz, you go first if you have any.
Okay.
I've got seven.
So yeah, like I said, I was kind of trying to be kind on this one. The overture is a big flat.
That was my first, that's my first flat. I got so mad because I'm like, what are you watching? And then you cut to images of Mozart. I'm like, that doesn't give me an answer.
And the, you know, as much as I love the dragon, it could be a flat if it wasn't so hilarious.
How dare you?
I love the dragon. Don't flat I love the that. Dragon, but I could see other people being really disappointed, you know, but I love the dragon. Like I said, it cracks me up every time I see it.
You know what? I'm going to also sharp all the animals because that is also part of the insanity that I was hoping for, that it only delivered in few moments. And I'm like, give me all of this. Like, have me see somebody put on the bear costume backstage, because that'll be funny. And also, you're doing your Brechtian, you know, you're watching a play. Like,
yeah.
God damn it. Anyway.
My flats are yeah, they're more broad. Full scenes of you know, or full sections of songs being sung directly into the camera. It is difficult to watch. You know, it really is. And I will say, leading up to this viewing, I was like, oh, I have to watch this again. And then I was surprised how by the time it ended, I had been, you know, more enveloped and kind of slowed down my brain enough to just enjoy what a sweet film it is. But yeah, it's difficult. It's definitely its own style. It moves at its own pace. Yeah, I will flat that direction. A lot of the textual changes, I like how it streamlines the story, but I think there are important things that are cut, which is a flat. I think it's a flat that some of the comedy is cut. There is a gag, which I think we'll see in the next film, so I won't really refer to it too much, but between Papageno and Monocytos, that either they just decided to do something else with. But so yeah, a lot of the comedy has been cut. And then I'm not really sure what that leaves us with, you know, as far as keeping us entertained as the story progresses.
Is that it for your flats?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. So as I agreed with you, the overture, I flatted the costume design. It just felt very pedestrian, and I understood what they were going for, but I was like, push the boundaries a little bit more. Like, I know this is 1970s, but like, imagination's imagination. Everyone has it. Mm-hmm. So like, go further with it. Do crazy shit. Like the three ladies and Queen of the Night. I was like, go crazier with them. They're magic. Have them do something. Speaking of, I flatted introducing magic into this grounded production. Like when the flute was floating, that was cute and fun, and I know how they did that, so that's fine. I'm talking like when all of a sudden the locket came to life and I'm like, this doesn't make sense. I flatted Bergman's daughter. I also flatted breaking the fourth wall. Because it just looks so creepy. I felt so uneased when they plastered on their smiles and they are singing and talking to the camera. And you're like, mm-hmm. I don't know how I'm supposed to feel right now. I flatted the subtitles as banners or set pieces. Because mm-hmm. I'm like, you're using it too much. Like, if it's supposed... Because you said it's supposed to be like a, like bold moments of like, this is important dialogue. This is an important phrase, but they used it too much that it lost its importance.
Agreed.
And then my last flat is for the concept and how it's broken and flawed. You can't give me a half-assed, we're doing a show within the movie.
Yeah.
You have to commit to it.
I would have preferred a movie. Right. Even if it was like with these simplistic set pieces and costumes, I would have preferred a fully enclosed movie.
100%.
I don't mind the back and forth that we get, because I'm just appreciative then that, okay, it wasn't just a camera sat in front of the stage, which would then just, you know, like a usual filmed performance. But yeah, overall, I would have preferred a full film.
And like, I've done a bunch of we're putting on a show type movies, mm-hmm. where you do see the backstage and what's happening on stage, and it doesn't have to inform what the performance at all, like what happens backstage. Mm-hmm. But if you're gonna do that, commit to it. Like Kiss Me Kate, like The Boyfriend, those are the two examples I can think of that I've done where they're clearly putting on a show. And you're seeing the show and they're they have the movie budget to do a lot of the crazy shit, and the stage always changes and morphs, which I could forgive if we were a little bit more in like the world of the audience or the world of the theater. I just can't forgive this movie, because unless it wanted to be like what Moulin Rouge represents, where you have the bookends in Moulin Rouge of the conductor and the curtain opening and everything. I mean, you could read it as either you're seeing an old-fashioned black and white movie or you're seeing a show in Moulin Rouge. But if we were going to do something like that, where you have the overture, everyone's staring at that drop and it opens up, but we go into the world, it turns
right as soon as it starts,
we're in the show, and then it pans out and we're no longer in the show. Like, you could have done so much with this, and that's what pissed me off, is that they just flailed around. I felt like, anyway, I mean, I know this is beloved by a lot of people, but I woke up and chose violence, everyone. I know this is going to be a difficult question to ask or to answer, but would you add any of the songs to your life's playlist? I didn't write any down, but I think right. I think I would listen to this soundtrack, because I don't know what's what, but it all sounded lovely.
Yeah, when I was thinking about this actually while watching the film, because I was impressed by the pieces that I sharped. But yet at the same time, I don't know that there's actually an audio recording of this. And when I go to listen to Die Zauberflot, I've never thought, okay, let me listen to the Bergman film. So
would you listen to this soundtrack if it existed?
For some reason, I feel like it would not be my go-to, but as I said, I mean, I think it sounded great, especially the choral pieces. Like, if I knew there was a recording of those choral pieces and that's what I wanted to hear, I think I would. Overall, like, I have a few recordings of the opera that I like for different reasons that, you know, like, I would probably go to, but that might even just be habit, you know, and like, again, not being familiar that there is an audio of this version available. So it might be like that, like, because I don't think it exists, I've never thought about it. But yeah, there are pieces that I really liked. So it is a possibility. And so then it would be the ones I sharped. It would be Tamino's aria, Pamina's Act Two aria, and the finales to both acts. I don't think I would listen to this version of The Queen of the Night on my life's playlist.
I thought she did a good job.
Yeah,
that is a good. Hard sing.
It's hard. And you know what? I think a big part of me saying that is actually just that I feel like I should hear it in the German. Like, yeah. That's how I'm used to hearing it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with you with what you're saying, is that if it's on, I'd listen to it, but I don't think I'm going to seek it out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were fine. They were great. I enjoyed the music. I enjoyed the voices, but I don't think I will seek this one out. So that's a maybe.
Yeah, I agree.
And on that note, Aaron, we're done with part two of our saga, of Magic Flute Saga. God, I hope the next one is insane. We have one more planned. I'm looking at my list. Yeah. And that won't be for a while, everyone. So you're going to have to hold
you
off.
Have time to recover.
I'm going to have time to forget about this and then be like, fuck, now I have to watch
Leading
it again.
Leading up to today, I was thinking, I should ask John if he watched it already and if we should just do Pirates of Penzance instead.
So you don't like this as well?
No, I do like it. It's just... okay, so it was probably the first film or filmed production of the Magic Flute that I ever saw. So I've seen like many staged and films of staged production since, or recorded stage production since, but this is probably the first. I was young, you know, I was probably a teenager, But so, you know, to me at the time, of course, it was slow. But I've seen it. I've seen it maybe twice since then. And there's things I like about it. But yeah, I mean, you know that it's going to be 2 hours. You have to be ready to, like, you know.
Oh, I didn't unwind, care about the length,
you know,
of it.
And like kind
of
sit and, you know, sit and take it in.
Surprisingly, I was like, fine, 2:15 for an opera. That's nothing. But
right.
It's still. It's just every, the mise en scène angered me.
I think what's happened is now that there's
a $3 phrase, you know.
Yeah, I think what's happened is that now that there's two other film versions, this one sticks out more in my mind for what it is in being contrast to the other two, you know. And so, like I said, in at least in the visual aspect, it's a really accurate interpretation of the magic flute, or what you might see, you know, in a traditional production of the magic flute.
Well, on that note, Aaron, what do you have to plug or promote?
Okay. Why don't you come over to Storybook Podcast and
yeah,
listen to a few tales like The Frog Prince or Cinderella, and then hear my panel of magical people, witches and wizards and magicians, as we sit and discuss these tales and what themes have been hidden within. We didn't get too much into that with the magic flute, but perhaps that might be a storybook episode in the future.
I am surprised that this isn't based off of a prior fairy tale or something. It feels like it should be.
There's elements of so many things that have been brought into it, you know, which I think might be one of the reasons it's a little bit of a mess.
No, but I mean, Matt, the Zabaflaut as an entity.
Yeah, I guess there is a collection of fairy tales called the Magic Flute. I will find out before our next discussion.
Great. And if you have that if you know that movie that I pitched, if it exists in the world, I'd love to hear about it. I'd love to watch it. You can email me at buttersongpod@gmail.com. I'm also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at buttersongpod. Tell me why I'm wrong. I mean, this movie is apparently so beloved that it's like the go-to for a lot of people. So tell me why I'm wrong with my feelings. It could have just been the day. You never know. That doesn't form. It doesn't form you when you're like, oh, I have to wake up and now watch this. But yeah, 300 plus episodes in. Come on, give me a break. Let me be angry at something.
Give another try in a couple years.
and if you want to be part of next episode's conversation, well, we're sticking to theater and we're going to be talking about Nonsense.
Awesome.
It's a film stage production, so it's actually in a theater. So there are rules established about that one. Oh boy. Aaron, thank you so much for coming back on. One more.
Thank you. I feel like I should apologize.
Why? Why? Content. I have to hate something. I can't love it all. You can't love it all, right? So yeah, maybe the next one we'll like. Who knows?
Well, next time with Kenneth Branagh. I'll see you then.
Okay. Oh, fuck. That's the one we picked. That's right. All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Special thanks to Aaron Troy for creating the pod's artwork and to Nick Bombacino for composing the theme song and the jingles. A huge thank you to CastBox for hosting this podcast. And thank you again for tuning in to today's episode of Life's But a Song. Bye for now, everyone, and have a musical day.